agenda is here. Today on the agenda, we have trying to figure out if we can choose an algorithm specification to go forward on. Issue 217, which is disallowing vnode identifiers as graph names. Issue 213, to do with kind of figuring out how to load HTTPS-based JSON-LD contexts. And issue 204, which is a design issue with relative IRIs and compaction. Other updates or changes to the agenda? Anything else we should discuss?
I recommend that we move 217 to the end since we spent so much time on it before.
Okay.
I'd like to make sure we get to the other ones, get back to that one.
Okay. So move 217 to the end. Marcus, you're up to scribe today. Would you mind? I'll scribe for you to speak since you did a full, you know, that did that in-depth review.
Not sure. I can scroll.
Okay. Okay. First up is choosing the algorithm specification. Marcus went through and did a very, very thorough review of the spec text that Dave Longley wrote, and I saw that Dave Longley also responded back with a number of changes to the spec and just responses to Marcus. So that's good because we're getting, you know, it seemed to me that a lot of the comments weren't like fundamental issues with the spec. They were more bug fixes and changing kind of pros and things along that nature. There are a couple of ones that kind of popped out as potential issues, things that we need to discuss as a group. But by and large, it looks like we're in pretty good shape. Okay, so Marcus, would you mind going through and just giving us a quick overview of the review that you did? And then we can kind of – I realize that it was a very long email and Dave's response was a very long response back. But I guess try and focus on things that you're still concerned about rather than things that seem to have been addressed. And then maybe we can discuss some of that on the call today.
Yeah, we'll try.
Right.
I have to say I haven't looked at the changes Dave did yesterday and today yet, so probably, or maybe he changed already some stuff. So basically, the algorithms in, I call them Dave's algorithms, are more or less the same as the ones I had in index.html. There are some minor differences, but overall they are more or less really the same. So Dave also uses an inverse context, which looks, I think, almost exactly the same. The other processing is more or less the same, especially the expansion side of algorithms. There aren't really any fundamental differences there. The algorithms are reordered a bit. Some statements were moved from one algorithm to the other, and some, well, actually one algorithm got split, so they've split out term, how is it called, term definition creation or something like that from context processing, which I'm not really sure whether it makes sense, but Greg said, at least to Greg, it made sense as well, so I'm fine with that. It's just a personal taste that I don't want to jump between too many algorithms when reading through them, but that's a minor comment. Looking at compaction, I found a number of bugs where I filed also some new test cases, and I saw Dave already fixed some of the algorithms and addressed some of the bugs. And I think all of the bugs basically had to do with property generators. and how they are processed. And the main issue there I discovered was that I think they've tried to optimize some of the algorithms, or probably he did optimize them in his implementation, but the algorithms as they were described, then really the optimization didn't bring any advantage. They complicated the description, in my opinion, and some bugs were introduced because I think he kind of simplified the description from and didn't kind of map his algorithm directly to the description because he tried to simplify it. And so there were some issues with that. And the question there is really if we want to keep that reorganization or whether we, I mean, the algorithms itself are more or less the same, but they are invoked in different, in a different order in different places, and some checks are moved from one algorithm to another, where, at least in my opinion, it would make sense to keep them in the place they have been before. So probably function side we don't need to discuss that much, I think, or we did that already in the mailing list. Then the compaction side, I think we should have a closer look, and also other people from the group should have a closer look. And the remaining algorithms, flattening, node map generation, and so on, they weren't changed at all so far.
Okay. So, are there any major concerns that you have, Marcus, with the spec review? Like, do you feel that alternate 2 is something that we can kind of tweak and work on and reorder, or do you feel that the one you wrote, index.html, is the one that we should choose and work on, or Greg's copy? Like, do you have a preference between the three on which one we kind of pick and then fix?
Well, I'm not entirely sure, but I would say for the expansion part, I would pick Dave's, so alternate 2. Whereas on the compaction side, I would take the one I wrote and implement some of the explanations Dave put in his algorithms. And the other thing that's completely missing from alternate 2 is the error constants, which I still believe belong into the algorithms, because otherwise it's really complex to track back for the API calls where you have to output which error code. But we have to find some language to agree. So we have to find some language where everyone agrees on that that's fine to put into the algorithm so that we don't couple them too much to the API.
Okay. Let's see. Anyone else? Greg, you said that you had a couple of opinions on at least a high-level read-through of the spec.
Well, I've started to go through and do some implementation, so my comments are probably mostly focused on the evaluation context stuff at this point. I found the evaluation context processing pretty logical, although I'm not entirely comfortable with splitting out the remote context evaluation. For my implementation purpose, it doesn't really help, since the Ruby is not an asynchronous implementation, and I think it's easier to consider the remote context in line with the other forms of context you might come across. And as my comment in email was, it felt like a sort of an optimization, or perhaps a premature optimization. So, but other than that, I think the splitting out the term definition makes sense to me, particularly since the term definition might recursively invoke another term definition. As far as ordering, I prefer to keep the evaluation context value and IRI expansion and compaction sort of closely related in the spec, since in my implementation anyway, evaluation context is a class, and it becomes logical then that the IR expansion, compaction, and so forth become methods upon that class. So having them together makes sense for me. See, there was a small comment about needing to be sure that there was a way to know that when you're doing document relative expansion, that the document is maybe the evaluation context itself. And I did a read-through of the expansion and compaction. I probably don't have an awful lot to say. They seem to me to be fairly similar, perhaps just moving things around a little bit. Marcus had a comment about perhaps doing the shorter things towards the top of the algorithm so that you get into the longer things later on. I see some logic in that. For instance, having the expansion of the scalar types perhaps come up top rather than be at the very end where it might sort of get lost. In terms of compaction and when we get into the use of the inverse context, I found it a lot easier to follow through using the type of terminology that Dave was using in being able to sort of understand the process that's going on. That's perhaps not so much the compaction algorithm as the IRI compaction algorithm. And that's really all I can say really specifically right now.
Okay. Do you have a preference between Marcus's spec text, your spec text, or Dave Longley's spec text?
Well, my spec text was intended to be sort of a minimal change route, mm-hmm. to be able to accomplish what we wanted to do without doing any substantial changes to the algorithms. I just don't think that that's going to happen at this point. The direction seems to be going more towards this style thing where there's sort of heavier weight mechanism of managing terms and specifically sort of an inverse context. I found in my algorithm I did have something similar to an inverse context, certainly an IRI to term mapping. And so the concepts are, they seem inevitable, so it seems reasonable to spell that out, although my concern is typically that being too specific in the algorithms ends up limiting the ability of these of implementers to create alternative implementations rather than having to stick exactly to what the spec text says. And that mostly is going to come about not so much, I think, in this, but in the test spec. If you're expected to reproduce exactly the beaten mode number naming, for instance, then that means that something that might, say, process some of these branches in parallel might produce different naming but be a isomorphic mapping, which we should allow. But that really gets into test methodology of how we determine that the solutions are congruent.
Mm. Right. Dave Longley, do you want to quickly go over some of the changes, not in detail because you've responded in detail on the mailing list, but at a high level, and then see if you have a preference between Marcus's spec text, Greg's spec text, and your spec text.
Sure. So at a high level, the first thing I'll say is Marcus hasn't gone back and seen my response yet, but I fixed the vast majority of all of the things you brought up including the stuff with property generators. What was happening there was I needed to reuse the algorithm for finding duplicates during term selection. And that's been added into the spec text. So the property generator stuff works now. A couple of the remaining items, one of them was related to inheriting, it was related to creating term definitions, and it had to do with inheriting properties from prefixes if your term is a query. And I think that what the new algorithm is doing is probably just incorrect now, because I thought that it functioned at properties, but apparently we don't. And it's probably a better way to go anyway, so you have to be explicit about defining mappings. So that's a very, very minor change that can happen to the algorithm. And from what I can tell, everything else are fairly minor changes. There was one thing that I did not, Marcus added a test case for choosing, had something to do with specifying a null language. So if you have a default language in a context and you have a term that that specifies as a null language mapping, he created a test case for figuring out whether or not if you have a scalar value, if you should be choosing a term that uses a null mapping or if you should be using a term that has no language mapping at all when there's a default language. And I think we just have a disagreement on which term should be chosen. The algorithms in Alternate 2 will choose the term with a null language, and Marcus thinks that the term with no language at all should be chosen if you have a value that's, say, like the number 5. And I think we need to have a quick discussion to figure out which way that should go. And we could do that now, or we can come back to it. I guess we'll just come back to that.
Just to expand on that a bit, if you had a value which was a string, I presume, and it was without a language, but there was a default language in the context it was being used, it would seem to me that you'd want to, in that case, use the term which had a language set to null.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Was that the case in Marcus's algorithm, or
I would expect Marcus's does that as well. I think it's just a difference for numbers. I think
so
I'm not sure.
When they're
just the difference for numbers.
Yeah, and I think that we should probably, regardless of what the scalar value is, choose the thing with the null language. I can see situations where you want to collect all of your numbers under a certain term when you have a default language. But you have no way to do that if you can't specify a null language to grab all those under a certain term. I don't really know what the utility is of making things that don't have languages appear under terms that are under the same that use the default language effectively. Seems a little bit more complicated.
Feels like that would lead to a surprise from the developers as well.
Well, you could also argue it the other way around. If you say explicitly that the language is null, I would expect that there are just plain literal strings, so strings without the language. Whereas if I don't specify anything, anything could be under that term. So numbers would.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to have anything that's conflicting. And it's a very subtle technicality that numbers don't have languages, therefore they're not conflicting. And I don't think most people would think about it that way. I think instead they would think, well, this doesn't have a language on here, so why is it here?
Yeah, I mean, you could argue both ways, I think.
Okay,
it
so
might be that which is the simplest implication, the one that is the least sort of outlying is the way to go in this case. In many cases, I don't think it really matters because the results are going to be the same either way. So I would tend to go for the one that had the fewest special cases.
I think neither of the algorithms introduces a special case for that. It's just the way they are written, one result comes up or the other.
Then maybe we should just toss a coin.
Well, I think that it's there is, you know, we can get into the theory on this and what makes sense, but to me it doesn't make sense for a number to have a language associated with it, or for a number, something that's a number in the JSON LD document, to be associated with a language, because it's not. It should be associated with something like XSD integer, or, you know, a native number value.
Well,
number 5 does not,
I mean,
have a language.
Just because there's default language, that means that numbers now have languages associated with them.
I think it does.
It might mislead someone to
language,
think that.
Because the default language is to say that, is to allow it so you don't need to be explicit about setting the language in the case where you have a string that wouldn't be interpreted otherwise. But if you have something like a, you know, one or true or false, in my mind, that was not intended to say the default language applies to that. I mean, if it did, then should the default language somehow apply to some object?
The default language for sure doesn't apply. Otherwise, the expansion algorithms are completely wrong, because we don't expand that to language text value object with a number.
The default language is there to describe how you interpret strings that are used as values.
Yes.
So with our use case, in the web payments use case, we have to use strings for numbers, for very, very small monetary amounts, like 0.00005 cents. And we need a way of saying, use this term, don't just assume this is the default language. You know, don't tack on the default language to that value, because it should not be tacked onto it, right?
Yeah, but if you're using a string, then you'll pick the term that has a null language defined for it. The case isn't where you have a string that has the form of a number, but when you have just a number.
You're going to end up splitting between two different terms, numbers and plain literal strings. Why are those in two different groups?
Oh, okay. So you're saying that in some cases you use a regular number, in some cases you use a string representation of a number, and what you don't want to have is that two different terms are selected because of that. I see the reasoning behind that.
It just seems like plain literal strings sort of fall in with numbers, because you're not supposed to have anything to do with language. But
if you declare those terms, either you don't use a default language or declare those terms, which can have either strings or numbers attached to them, to have a language of null in the context, shouldn't that take care of any ambiguity?
Well, there are obviously ways to avoid to avoid the ambiguity. The question is, are we making this so that we're tailoring it towards the less common use case or towards the more common use case? Is it more common for people to think of plain literal strings as going along with numbers, or are they two separate groups?
Well, for me, it's still, if I specify a language or if I do anything which includes a language, I'm talking about strings.
Yeah, that's true, but that's coming from the other direction. I agree.
Yeah,
go ahead.
But, yeah, also setting the language explicitly to there is no language, for me, that implies that I'm talking about strings, not numbers. But, yeah, I also see your point, so.
I would argue that it's not clear what you're talking about. It's not clear that you're talking about strings and not numbers. You're just not making a statement about it.
No, you make a statement. You say there's something which explicitly has no language, which doesn't make sense for numbers because there's never a language, in my opinion, but strings could have a language.
So I don't understand how that line of thinking leads to the result for the test case that you put into the test suite.
Where's the URL for that?
Yeah, I mean, let's get that. And Marcus, do you have a link to that off the top of your head? Or?
It's one of the latest computational tests. But give me a second.
Here you go.
Great.
So the first link is the input to the test, and the second is the output. And the output contains the context that is applied.
And what's the...
So the question is, the question is, should property nolang be chosen, or should property language null be chosen as the term for the number 5?
And the way I read this context is the language for all properties is DE, right? And therefore, the data that's expressed, 5, is a number. It has no language. So we should look for something that doesn't have language, which is property language null. So the output should be property language null, 5, not property nolang, 5.
So just a quick question. So if the other properties, so property language null wouldn't be there, you wouldn't choose property nolang, but you would keep the whole IRI because it has the language of German in this case?
Yes.
Yep.
That's certainly something I'm not into do.
I think that in this case I pick the first property because it's more specifically matches the value, but in the other case you can use the untyped term because the value doesn't have a language.
I could see it going that way.
Yeah. I guess, so there are two questions here. The first question is, when you use at language, does it apply to every single property in the context? Is it like saying there's a language for every single property?
Right. I don't think so. I think we said that at language means that every string value is interpreted as being literals, a language string with the language supplied in the context. Because that also works for if you use vocab, the properties appear on the fly. And
right.
I think I would be okay with it, with choosing null because it's the more specific one, and then falling back on nolang if it weren't there. That does, I think, make the most sense to me.
Dave, do we have it? Are the algorithms written such that at language is applied to every property, or do we just keep that around as the default language? And whenever we see a string, that's
it only gets applied to strings.
Okay. Well, in that case, then I think the general approach that I think Marcus and Nicholas are explaining makes sense here.
It sounded like Nicholas was saying something different from Marcus.
He is, yeah. So specifically, Marcus is saying at language DE is not applied to anything that's not a string, which is true. And what Nicholas is saying is the first thing should be picked because it's more specific than the second thing. But if the first thing didn't exist, you could still pick property nolang, and that would be correct.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement with Nicholas.
Okay. Marcus? Does that sound reasonable?
In fact, I also just checked, and that's what the current the alternate two algorithms actually do. It does what Nicholas says.
Okay. Marcus, does that do you find any fault with that line of reasoning?
Yeah. Well, I said my opinion, but I would be fine with doing it that way. What I would not be fine with is don't choosing the other term at all.
Okay.
Just
all
keeping
right.
The full IRI.
Neither would I. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's off the table. Okay. So let's just go ahead and say that we're reaffirming that at language DE just applies to strings. In this particular test case, property language null should be picked because it's the most specific one.
I think that's the easiest to understand for most people. You don't
that's
have to get
also
the,
what my
the subtlety.
Implementation does.
Okay.
All right, so we're done with this one. Okay, so let's bounce back to the rest of your responses, Dave.
Sure. Okay. There were some comments about the actual text in the introduction. Both Marcus and Greg were saying that it would be better to have more emphasis on removing a context when describing expansion. I'm okay with having more emphasis on that, but I do think that people should, I think it's easier to understand the purpose of expansion by being very clear about that really what it's about is it's an intermediary step from getting you from one context to another. That's really what I think expansion is about, because I think the vast majority of people that use JSON-LD are going to be using data with their own contexts. That's really what I think it's all about, is working with data that's expressed using your own context. And you need a way to get to someone else's context, and you need expansion as the first step to making that happen. I think there are some fewer use cases where people might actually just use expanded form, but I don't think that that's the most common case. And I think we can change the text around, but I wanted to make a case for us leaning on what I think is important with how JSON-LD works and really what expansion's purpose is. I'll let Marcus and Greg respond to that.
Well, I don't.
Well,
you know, expansion's purpose is not simply to do compaction, right? It's you need to do expansion to transform to RDF as well. So in some cases that will be the use case, is to put it into a normalized form so that you can get it into RDF.
Well, we need to be careful also with talking about using a normalized form and things like that, because that's not actually what happens. And we don't want to confuse people with that.
All right. So
I think it's very
normalized form with, you know, with expanded form then, or something, or expanded flattened form, which is what we were talking about.
Yeah, I think what we might want to do when we're talking about RDF is say you can repurpose expansion to once you've removed a context, since RDF doesn't have any context, you can then output something, you know, that has no context. I think this is just a matter of what kind of language we use to describe it. I do think that it's important that we say expansion is about removing context, but I absolutely think that we should not remove the main purpose for why expansion is there. In the previous document, it felt very odd for me to come along and read this and say, there were several other issues with it, but to say, we need to remove context. Like, well, why am I doing that? I think it's important to say why, and I think the best way to do that is to give the most common use case for JSON-LD.
Yeah, and in a previous version of a spec that Dave wrote, they were called something completely different, right? It was like remove context and add context or something like that?
Those were the original names, yes.
Yeah, so expansion and compaction was something that came along. We renamed it later on, but the original intent for expansion was just removing a context. It was really simple and straightforward. Compaction was, you know, applying a context. It was apply context. Compaction was applying a context to something that was or was not expanded previously. So, and I think that as Dave said, that is the intent of expand and compact. It's not for you know, the fact that we end up using something like that to convert to RDF, I think, is secondary, because the conversion to RDF didn't come until a little bit later. Not to say that we don't use expanded flattened form to convert to RDF, but I think it makes sense for us to just keep it simple when we introduce expansion and compaction.
But
go ahead.
Is it really simpler to say to switch between contexts than to just say the context is removed? I mean, for me, it's much simpler to say all the information is directly embedded into the document, and I don't have to deal with the context, which is a difficult part in the processing. I don't have to deal with it anymore. And then in compaction, I apply a context to, compact it again.
I think what needs to be done is we need to say what its main purpose is, and then we can elaborate and say expansion is about removing a context so all the data is localized in the document. I just want to make sure that we say both things. I obviously don't want it to get too lengthy, but I want it to be clear to people. This is effectively the first thing they're going to be reading when they come to the features in the document. And I think a lot of people that are going to come into this are going to get a better idea for what JSON-LD is about if they see that it's about expressing data in different contexts. The same data in different contexts, and then they can go. Maybe it needs to be its own section before you get into expansion. Maybe that would be a better way to do it. And then you can say, expansion is about removing the context, and then you can say compaction is about adding the context. Maybe that would be a better way to reorganize it. But so there's probably a compromise in here that will get what both of us or what everybody in here wants.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the way you stated it there is right. I mean, expansion is about removing the context. Compaction is about adding a context.
Right.
Okay, well, maybe we can have an introductory paragraph for the remaining. I mean, we already have that introductory paragraph, but we should probably add that to the introductory paragraph to make it very clear before people jump into, expansion.
I think that would flow a little better.
I thought we already had that in the document, but maybe not. I could have sworn I remembered reading that.
Well, that would be just editorial in any case. So I don't see that as being. I mean, we do need to be mindful of our timelines. This came up on the RDF call last week. It's really trying to get everything into LC in February or beginning of March, really at the latest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think the more time we spend on things which could be done after LC, the harder it's going to be to actually get the core out.
Right. So I guess with that said, does anybody believe there's anything fundamentally wrong with index.html, alternate one that Greg did, or alternate two that Dave Longley did, that would prevent us from publishing it as a last call in the next couple of weeks? And this, keep in mind, it means that if there are bugs in it, we would have to go in and fix them, and the people that are fixing them would have to have the time to fix them, all that kind of stuff. So,
I don't think there are any major bugs in any of those documents that can't be fixed fairly quickly.
Okay.
Keeping in mind what Greg just said, I'll skip some of the other comments I was going to make. I'll just skip that. My preference would probably be to go with alternate two, but go back and maybe pull in some more of what Mark has had, where we can simplify algorithms. I'm a little wary of trying to simplify algorithms because they appear to be long, because I feel like that extra verbosity was there to help an implementer really explain the steps that they have to go through. I do think that we should pull in the error stuff for Marcus's spec and somehow make it work for Greg. And there may be one or two algorithms in there that could do with some reordering. I do have a strong preference for doing the simplest steps first and then doing the more complex steps later. I think I moved away from that with at least one algorithm because I thought a lot of implementers would see if handling the scalar case is sort of odd first, because in a lot of languages, what you do is find out if something, you find that something is a scalar by process of elimination. So effectively, you would do the other steps first and then handle the case where it's a scalar because it can't be anything else. But that's neither here nor there. It could go either way. There's trade-offs. And I think effectively, I think we should try to address some of Marcus's concerns and maybe Gray's concerns as well by pulling in things and making changes to alternate two, since it's generally the most up-to-date and the most congruent with previous algorithms that we had with the processors.
I guess I support basing what we do on alternate two as well. I found the sort of the structure of it to be easier to get through, and I found the algorithms easier to walk through. Although that was specifically directed towards toward understanding the effect of the inverse context. I think it's important that we pick one and then we merge the best attributes of the others into it, rather than just trying to keep going forward on, you know, on different bases.
I agree with that.
Anybody else have input on this before we do a proposal for alternate two?
What would the proposal be?
Base future JSON-LD algorithm 1.0 specification work on Dave Longley's alternate two specification, pulling in any modifications from Marcus's algorithm rewrite, something to that effect.
So what does that mean, for example, for compaction and the property generator stuff? And
we still need to discuss that, but I think it would be easier for us to just pick whichever spec we feel is the easiest to read, the most desirable. So we pick whichever spec is most desirable to the group at this point, and then we discuss the changes that we need to make to that spec as a second step. And those changes might be pulling in some of the stuff from the Marcus's spec into Dave Longley's spec.
I mean, do we really have to vote on it like binary? Can we just, like we were discussing that on the mailing list, so could we just continue that discussion and start merging the...
I have some work I need to do on RDF, the RDF algorithms, and I've been waiting for us to pick before I hop in and do that. And we're, you know, halfway through February. I think it's important that we establish which one we're going forward with, and if there's a approach that makes more sense for, say, compaction, then that's fine. We could change the body of the compaction algorithm if we agreed to do that. But I just think that doing it within the index 2, where we've got the, I think it's currently stated as problem and general approach, and I think also the way that the term definitions are called out in there is a little easier to deal with.
I think this is just about getting a base layer down so we can all be working on the same document. We just need to get a new base down and then pull in those things that need to change.
Yeah, keeping in mind that there is a full implementation for the alternate two spec, and I think Dave Longley his time is committed to make sure that the spec is fixed and kept up to date so that we stay on our timeline with the RDF working group.
Yeah, the same is true for index, by the way.
Okay, so do you want to do a preference poll for both then? Let's just do one for both. Greg, are you putting your spec forward as a candidate for what we'd settle on?
I think there's been enough pushback on the term rank bits that are in there that I certainly haven't been spending any more time on it, so I would withdraw that one, I guess.
Okay.
I don't want to do a call for both, but I really had some problems with the compaction side, so I would like them to be addressed somehow. That's the reason why I'm...
Yeah. Okay, and I think we fully intend to... I mean, they need to be discussed, absolutely. Basically, if we have any...
We're selecting a basis for the document rather than buying off on every detail of every algorithm that's in there.
Yeah. Yeah, specifically that is
yes.
not what we're doing.
Okay.
Okay, so Marcus, you want us to just do one proposal then?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yeah. If we need a proposal at all.
Yeah, I honestly think we actually need to do another pass over the inverse context stuff and make it not so implementation specific. But as Greg said, it's way too detailed, and so we need to do things like that. We're just getting a base down. Is that proposal too complicated?
With a provision that we better come up with final algorithms pretty damn soon.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that whatever changes that are made to the spec need to just be worked. They need to work, and they need to be vetted. Because we know that what's in the spec right now, I believe at least, is mostly correct to the point that we wouldn't have to go through another last call if we found something wrong with them. But yeah, we really need to get in the last call soon. Nicholas, are you?
Yeah, just to be clear. Sorry.
Okay. Okay, and Marcus, we're partially doing this to just send a message to the RDF working group that we are making progress. Okay, let's table this for right now. I would hope Marcus and Dave Longley, you two are going to continue to go back and forth on the compaction algorithm on the mailing list. Is that okay?
Sure.
Do we need to discuss that on the call at all?
No,
I don't think so.
A waste of time.
Okay. Issue 213, vulnerability when loading HTTP-based JSON-LD contexts. Just very, very quickly on this, we found a security vulnerability with PaySwarm, where you could reverse a transaction by loading a JSON-LD context from a remote location where either your DNS was poisoned or the remote system's context was attacked and replaced. Now that is, those are two different attacks, two entirely different attacks. The one that we're most concerned about preventing is the DNS poisoning attack. And so to mitigate this, and this isn't a full solution to the attack, we would require that remote contexts are loaded over HTTPS. we would probably end up using an internal checksum, a hash or the document to prevent cases where the certificate authority was attacked. But basically what this boils down to is that these series of attacks that you can make on the system could be mitigated if we end up having providing a mechanism to the JSON-LD API that allows the JSON-LD processor to decide how it loads remote contexts. So, for example, if it requires HTTPS for the remote context, how it caches the remote context, if it takes a checksum of the HTTP context from a variety of different sources. The JSON-LD context from a variety of different sources. So instead of building each one of these prevention mechanisms into the JSON-LD API, perhaps it would be better for us just to have a callback. Yes, exactly, a hook in the JSON-LD API to load a remote context. Thoughts on that approach?
Yeah, this is a feature I already have put into the processors I've implemented, and it's very useful to just let the processor call out to some completely customized mechanism that will take a URL and give you back a context or give you back an error. And that way you can just, we don't have to deal with any of this stuff. We can just completely defer to whoever's using the processor to deal with it themselves.
I think that's the way to approach it. I certainly would be more reluctant to put into the body the algorithms that the remote context need to be HTTPS.
Right.
Yeah, we can just avoid all this stuff and anything we haven't even thought of that other people might want to do and just make a hook for this and just require that the hook work.
Okay. Go ahead.
Which would mean that every implementation would have to implement that.
Every implementation of the processor would need to take as a possible option something that a method that will take a URL and give you back a context or an error.
Every implementation of the API.
Of the API, yeah. Yes. Sorry.
Wouldn't it be much simpler to just say there is a flag to disable remote context at all? And if you need anything else, well, your implementation can do whatever it wants, but I find it a bit demanding to require every API to define such an interface where everyone can hook in basically everything they want. And it's also very difficult.
The flag is it doesn't really solve the problem for us because we wouldn't use that flag.
I think it makes sense for the API, given that other implementations might want to take advantage of local caches and other things that they want to, so that they want to control the URL resolver.
Yeah, I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. I'm just a bit worried that that's too much complexity to the API. I mean, it's kind of like if you would say for your browser, you can specify which network library it's going to use.
Well, I think it's more like if you're going to use some JavaScript, you can specify the callback that you use to fetch a URL. You can use jQuery, you can use some other tool to get the data for you.
How would that...
It's fairly common for that sort of thing to happen in PHP projects as well. If you're using WordPress, you might make different calls out that you want to reuse the caching capability there, those sorts of things. You don't want to have to rely on the processor to go off and do all of its own URL processing. You might want to handle that a little bit differently on your website.
Is there a proposal how that interface would look like in detail?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Is there a concrete proposal how that interface would look like so So what method signature would that dereferencer have to implement, or what parameters does it take? Or
it's fairly close on the in the link to 213. It doesn't have a method signature there, but it describes it in prose. It would just be a function that takes a URL and a callback, and the callback will return an error or null and the context or the result of the URL of dereferencing it.
Text JSON or so parsed JSON or
we can decide that.
Or?
We can decide. It might be easier to do plain text.
Okay.
Yeah, we might want to do plain text. We're just a JSON object. Well, actually, you know what? It doesn't matter, does it? Well, actually it does, doesn't it? I was wondering if there was a use case where you'd want to fetch the JSON-LD context from an RDFA document. Well, that seems like a ridiculous use case. You'd want to construct it from an RDFA document.
We don't have a way to be able to specify a context in RDF.
You could use you could create a vocabulary that expresses JSON-LD context, and then your thing could, you know, glean the context from an RDFA document. But that's, again, it's kind of a ridiculous use case.
Yeah, someone might do it.
What would happen if you don't pass that dereferencer?
It would use the default.
A required parameter?
No, it would just use a default one that's built in.
Could we say if you don't pass any, you throw an error if a remote context is encountered?
I think if you wanted to do that, you would just pass a callback that which threw an error if it was called.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so
fine with it.
Okay, so I think this is the proposal.
And we should feel free to change the name there if it's too ugly.
Of course, this is only necessary for things which invoke expansion, which I guess is everything, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's whenever you do a remote context processing.
Yeah. All right.
That's resolved. Next issue is issue 204, which is a design issue with relative IRIs and compaction. The main issue with this is that we are trying to use terms on the right-hand side in JSON-LD documents without being forced to use queries. And one of the resolutions we made a few weeks ago forces us to use queries on the right-hand side, which is not good because we had never wanted that as a side result. We, meaning the people working on the web payments work, never wanted that as a side effect. So the question here is, how are we going to resolve the desire for relative IRIs being used in compaction when things are compacted and the ability to use terms on the right-hand side in ID effectively? And unfortunately, we haven't really had any new suggestions on how to resolve this in the issue tracker. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah. From my point of view, there are two options. Well, actually, they are. You could have them both if you want to. The thing that we probably have to do in this case is to recommend to demand that if you generate relative IRIs, you should use .slash in any case, because that makes it clear, and it really minimizes the risk that somebody has declared a term which starts with .slash. So that's the minimum kind of damage control that we can do when we auto-generate relative IRIs. And I think that we're fairly in agreement on that point. The other thing, which is a bit more tricky, is that depending on how people are going to generate their data, it's not entirely clear that they will have this sense of the danger of using relative IRIs. We don't start with .slash, so that they might, for instance, have documents which is related to the current document, which are named license. And they have a context which defines the term license, and it is coerced to an ID. And from their point of view, when they look at the data, they have license colon license, which should be the property license linking to the license document, which would never happen. Instead, you would have a property linking to itself. And the only way I can see to be on the safe side here is, and I've changed my mind a bit since the last time. Previously, I'd said that we should not allow ID to interpret terms, but could be, I mean, in either case, I am suggesting a new term to be usable for type coercion. And previously I'd said that ID should only expand QRIs or IRIs, but I think that's not a good idea, because we've thought of it all this time as expanding term QRI and IRI. So I'm fine with keeping that the way it is. But although I know we don't really like to add new keywords, and we have had a syntax freeze, really, but a suggested addition would be to add a term or a keyword called URL, or IRI, if you will, because we say IRI everywhere, but people like URL, and it's more webby and HTML5-y, so it might be more palatable. And the sole point of that would be to be used in type coercions for properties which should only, whose value should only be URLs, relative or absolute or somewhere in between.
So there are two things that I heard. One of them is that we could use just prepend dot slash to all of the relative IRIs. And the other thing I heard was that we need to, or we could add add URL for type coercion. I don't understand the link between the two. Why would we need add URL if we're going to do dot slash, if we're going to prepend dot slash relative URLs?
We don't need it. We people might want to need it if they don't understand that terms will be expanded on IDs. So it's just a new safety tool. I'm not so adamant about it. I'm a bit concerned about people using the license colon license, but in reality that will probably not happen and people will realize it. So I won't really push for URL, but it might be a good idea in the more wild scenarios where people publish data and don't really understand the intricacies and interplays of terms in ID.
Mm-hmm. Marcus, you're on the queue.
Second. If we are going to allow terms as value of at ID, does that imply that at VOCUP, for example, is also effective in values of at ID?
I don't think we meant for that to happen, but we should probably discuss that.
Because if we would do that as well, then IRIs would be handled the same everywhere. Otherwise, I don't really see why we should introduce kind of a special case for terms there.
Is there a reason not to use vocab there? What is the reason? What are the arguments against using vocab there?
We meant vocab to always be something that should be effective on the left-hand side of things. And I forget, we had another thing that might have been effective on the right-hand side.
Type.
Yeah, it's also by type. So right. Whenever it's something like a class or a property that's the value of that, then vocab has an effect on that value. But at ID normally isn't.
So we already break that rule. We already break the vocab only on the left-hand side for type.
Yeah, and also for values in the context for ID for terms.
Right. Yeah, if there isn't a good argument for not using vocab with terms on the right, then let's just, if we do go with terms and IDs, then let's just use vocab as well and make it all consistent.
Yeah, I think the main thing, if coming from RDFA, where we do have different rules for basically properties and subjects and objects, in order to deal with, to distinguish a term which is really a relative IRI from something which is related to a vocabulary. Perhaps that doesn't make as much sense in JSON-LD, but I am a little concerned if we have rules in there about prepending dot slash that we're being very chauvinistic towards HTTP IRIs and prepending dot slash doesn't make sense in many IRI schemes. On the other hand, most of those schemes neither do relative IRIs.
They make sense on all hierarchical IRIs.
Yeah,
and they are the only ones who can be relative.
Right.
That's true.
That's effectively what I was going to say. So.
Yeah, but I think that if we really want to use terms here, and it simplifies processing to treat them as sort of the expansion case identically. So are we? So we're saying that basically the document relative includes vocabulary relative. Or is there no longer a document relative? It's always the same?
If we would say that advocab is evaluated, then as soon as you put in advocab, you wouldn't be able to express relative IRIs anymore.
Without a dot? Without making
not
it
even with a dot.
Yeah, that would be
because
a problem.
Advocab is not, that's not a base. It's like a global prefix.
Yeah. So that would be a problem. We need to be able to specify relative IRIs.
But what's the mechanism? There might be a bigger problem with the behavior of vocab if so, because in RDFA, for instance, vocab is only used to resolve terms, and terms are defined as at least they start with just letters or numbers and nothing else. Well, in this case, I'm not sure what happens if you, in a compact JSON-LD document using vocab, have on the right-hand side, whereas the value of ID, a full IRI. Does vocab get prepended to that as well?
No, because there's a colon in it. I believe that's the check there.
But if there was only a slash and an absolute but not full IRI, i.e. starting with slash, would Would Voca be prepended to that, or would it be resolved against the base IRA?
Voca would be appended to that for at type currently.
Okay, that's problem. That's the deviation from the behavior of RDFA, at least.
I think it perhaps does make sense to limit the applicability of vocab to those things which are basically like NC names.
Yeah.
There is also the question whether we should do on the right-hand side any kind of context magic, or whether we should just have relative and absolute IRAs there, for example. For example, why is type at type different from at ID?
Type does come from vocabularies. And in my implementation, I had basically, instead of passing document relative and vocabulary relative, I passed position, whether it's subject, predicate, object, or data type. And if it was predicate or data type, I performed vocab relative. And if it was subject or object, I performed document relative.
Yeah. That's how it should work, I think.
Could you say that again, Greg?
Yeah, I couldn't follow that.
Okay, so there's four sort of cases in RDF where IRIs are used as a subject, as a predicate, as an object, or as a data type. Mm-hmm. And in the case of predicate and data type, that's where it makes sense to have it work relative to vocabulary. Mm-hmm. In the case of the subject and an object, for the most part, it makes sense to be document relative.
Yep. Yeah, agreed. So you're saying that should guide this decision? That's the underlying thing that you're getting?
Well, I think that it's fine for us to use document relative and vocabulary relative. It's just that we should be using them, I think, in those contexts is when you are when you're evaluating a key, it's vocabulary relative. When you're evaluating something which is the value of a type, it's vocabulary relative. And every place else, it's document relative.
Yeah.
With obviously exceptions for text processing.
So that would mean that ID, when we process ID, we wouldn't be doing it in a vocab relative way.
Right.
Which would be kind of confusing to people because is that true? I'm trying to think of how this is. So this caught us by surprise the first time around because we didn't realize, or at least I didn't realize, that if we put a term on the right-hand side, that in expanded form, it's going to expand out into it's going to be ID. Basically, the ID is not. It's. I'm trying to figure out how to say this. I guess here's the question: Is the vocabulary ever going to be used to expand something on the right-hand side of a statement in JSON-LD? So if we have this, is vocab ever going to apply to the right-hand side of that?
Not in that case.
No. What if it's type horse to an ID?
For at type, yeah.
No, it's still if it was typecast, it would be document relative IRI.
Okay, so that's. For type it would work out fine, but I'm concerned about foo.
Yeah, foo would be document relative because it is not the value of a type or ID. It's not the value of a type, and it's not a property.
Okay, well, that doesn't work for the use case. That the whole reason this came up, right? Because we want to be able to expand that.
But that's why I suggested having a keyword to represent the value space, the vocabulary value space, which is used to resolve left-hand values and type values, properties and type values.
So you're saying
your concern is that purchase request it's not a defined term, but
if it's a defined term, then that doesn't matter if it's vocab.
Defined term, and its value range is an ID, then it's expanded. Yeah,
If we wanted to cover the use case where you would apply vocab there, what we could do instead of creating a new keyword like URL, which I think might be confusing, is we could in the context, you could do the type is at vocab. It's a little odd, but it would make it clear that you would apply the vocab to it.
True.
Yeah, something like that is more palatable because, well, that's basically the keyword meaning the vocabulary space instead of
right.
the document space.
Yeah,
but if you're doing if you're doing that, then you've defined a term. If you have something where you can say the type is at vocab, then it's already a term.
This is true.
So vocab only comes in when it's not a term and you want it to be evaluated that way. And really, this was only really intended for properties to make it easy to make JSON documents with keys in there to turn the keys into an IRI.
Yeah. So the last use case that I'm concerned about is the schema.org use case where they just put vocab at the top and just use a whole bunch of schema, single statement terms all over there. Sorry, they just use everything that they use is from the schema vocab.
Yeah, and would they then expect that the right hand side of ID expands to the schema terms?
I think they. Well,
I can't imagine they would.
But that's the same argument than expanding terms there. Because if you never define a term somewhere and everything expands, and you see an example like that purchase request example somewhere, you would assume that it also works for that schema stuff.
Well, I think I expect something like schema.org to be used for vocabulary terms and not for arbitrary values of properties.
I'm trying to. So here's where it really comes in. If there's a type, if you need, well, no, type works just fine. If you're specifying
some kind of enumeration is what's going on.
Yeah, exactly right. So the question is, does schema.org have some kind of enumeration?
No.
Do they enumerate things? And if they don't, then this is not an issue.
So long as they don't ever do it.
Right. Yeah, if they introduce it, then there's a problem.
If they do, then there should be a context that defines these things for schema.org that you include. If that was ever going to be the case.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. So, I think at least my preference would be to not introduce any kind of new keyword, to follow the suggestion that Greg has made, that vocab just doesn't apply to ID. And then we still need to prepend ./ to the beginning of all relatives.
I don't see why we do.
So we don't.
No, because you know you're using it, you're doing document relative expansion in that case. So you don't need to use a ./.
No, but suddenly the license blows up.
Yeah. So what do you do when you compact down to a term that exists in your context?
If you see a term definition, then you expand the term definition. It's just the question of what happens when you don't have a term definition. So if you say license, and license obviously is a term, then it would expand as a term. And that seems like we're following exactly what the person that's using the context that said they want to have happen.
So we're saying it's human error, effectively.
Yeah, because I'd be more likely to say what license.ttl or license.html if I wanted. What otherwise, you depending upon some,
I think,
some content negotiation.
I think the simplest
solution. But that's what you should do.
Well, there's
the license resource should have the name license, and if it's relative to the current document, it would be named license.
Mm-hmm. Marcus, you were going to jump in there, say something.
Well, I just wanted to say that minimal change we could make is that we keep everything as it is currently. Or, well, we also support terms there, but we just compact them to relative IRIs if it doesn't collide with a defined term. So we do the same as with creating compact IRIs. If it collides with a defined term, we just keep the full IRI in compaction.
That's brittle and hard to follow, I think. It's not uniform.
Well, it's the same argument for prefixes. We don't use queries if they collide with a definition in the context.
I could live with that decision, but it seems like prepending a dot slash would be cleaner, because then you know if it's got a dot slash on it and it's an HTTP. You know, it's a hierarchical, you know, that's expressed in relative form.
Well, but you also have to consider that we don't have any restrictions for terms, so they can be any string.
That's true, but if somebody does dot slash as the beginning of their term, they're asking for it. I mean,
yeah.
You know, there's only so much we can do to protect them.
I don't think we need to worry about that case.
Yeah, once they hit that level.
Isn't that the same thing? I mean,
the same thing as what?
I mean, if there is a collision, you just can't compact it. Whether there is a dot slash at the beginning or not, it doesn't really matter.
Well, it's the human users are the problem here.
I mean,
how
it's
can you
always
possibly know there's a collision?
It's always ambiguous if you have terms on the right-hand side, because you never know without looking at the context whether it's a relative IRI or a term. And we can't prohibit that.
I think we should, but if we shouldn't, we should at least be consistent and prepend dot slash to them.
So if someone creates a document and this and that's not defined, so something like that, so that would be illegal. Where not defined is not defined in the context, but foo is cursed to ID.
I don't think it would be illegal. If we recompacted, we would add dot slash to it. So it wouldn't round trip totally cleanly.
Yeah. And that's why I prefer to make a distinction, to not have to do that. But if we don't make a distinction with the keywords, we have to do that to be consistent. Otherwise, we're just setting up small booby traps all over the place.
Yeah. Well, the other solution would still be to have something like @type, @vocab, for example, so that terms and @vocab would be in effect for that thing there. But that wouldn't work for @id then, of course.
No, but I'd like that. The problem is that currently ID is sometimes used to resolve against terms, at least in the context, I think.
Well, wouldn't @type, @vocab imply that it's an ID? You only use @vocab on IDs.
It does imply it's an ID.
Right.
But it specifically says it's not document relative. So I like that too.
At least the intent is quite clear if you specify it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But would it also mean that license quest to ID would not expand a value of license if...
So if you type quest to add ID, that license would be interpreted as a document relative IRI. If you type quest to add vocab, it would either be add vocab or the term.
Yeah.
If there is a term.
Right.
And that's I really like that. I'm trying to think. Well, the thing we should note, though, is that that should also mean that a value in the context for a term which has ID in it, we should be consistent there, so that if you define a term in the context and you say ID and another term, that should be a document relative thing. It should not use another term or expand against vocab.
I would be fine with that, yeah.
To be consistent. I would prefer it to resolve with vocab, probably, but...
Well, if you have vocab, you don't even have to specify the add ID, so you just leave it out and the term on the left-hand side then expands automatically to an IRI.
Yeah, and if you want to rename it, you should just use the full IRI or a QRI and not rely on some...
Yeah, I think in the context we should actually not use relative IRIs at all, but just absolute ones.
Right.
Because then we don't have any problems with passing the right based on context, for example.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
I'm all for making context as simple as possible.
I don't think... I think things should be fine if we have this type vocab mechanism.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Manu, that should also solve your use case, right? You can define a term which has type vocab and then you can resolve those keys.
I think so.
Yeah, it seems like it would cover a use case. It also is, I like that it's more explicit about what the purpose of that property is. That you're, it makes it more clear that you're trying to use some kind of enumerated type there.
Yeah. And you could use...
The concern I have is vocab isn't necessarily... I mean, it is an add term, right? Add vocab seems to imply that you're only using the value from add vocab, not necessarily from, you know, any value that's in the context, if I'm following correctly. The semantics of it are a little weird.
Yeah, I also think that things like IDs and types are used with overloaded values. So if we're going, since we're already doing that, overloading values depending on context, conserving the number of keywords, this wouldn't break that pattern.
You could always argue that your context is basically your vocabulary.
Yeah, and that vocab is also used to resolve undefined terms. So that we could pretend that we had already had this vocab mechanism and then realize that vocab could also be used to set a default vocabulary. And then maybe it's easier to...
Yeah, I see the that line of reasoning. Okay, that's convincing enough. It's fully convincing. Okay, so it sounds like we have consensus. I don't necessarily know exactly what all of the consensus is. So
yeah, I think we need to spell out all the different things that are going to happen. Like if we do compaction, what happens? We need to spell all these things out and vote.
Okay, hold on. So we're getting rid of the whole dot slash thing. Is that correct? We're not going to prepare dot slash anything.
No, we don't need that.
We don't need it now.
Okay, good. Okay, so we are introducing a new something new in the context that you can specify. You can specify add type colon add vocab.
Yep.
If you do that, then the list of things that can go on the right-hand side of that term are, well, is it only something that's in the, is it an absolute, we're supporting absolute IRIs?
I think it works exactly like how properties and type values are resolved right now. So it's either a defined term, or if it is a QRI, it expands. If it's a full IRI, it expands. And if it's just a local value, it resolves to against vocab. Or not resolve, it's vocab is prepended.
Okay, and if there's no vocab?
Then I think we said it's document relative.
Yeah. So just okay. As at type is currently processed.
Yeah.
If it's in the document.
Okay, so let's see. So this is if at type colon at vocab is specified for term in the active context, then processing for ID attempts to resolve as a term first, then a query, then an absolute IRI, then a document relative IRI. Is that what we're designing?
Did you get?
It's not processing for at ID though.
It's processing for something that's associated with the term.
Yeah.
The value of that property, using that term. So values of that term or property values of that term, or I don't know how to call it. But it's not the value of at ID.
Yeah. Let's see. And processing for the value associated with the term. Attempts to resolve it as an IRI. First, processing it as a term. Well, is that that?
I think also second to last, there should be then against the active vocab if specified, otherwise a document relative IRI.
Okay, so absolute IRI.
If that is the rule for type and predicate right now, I'm not sure about the...
That's the rule.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that...
Yes.
I could also say that to use type vocab must be defined in the vocabulary.
Not necessarily, though.
Then we'd never hit document relative.
Because you might want to use that just to pick out the terms. So you don't have to use the default vocabulary. Because in the use case that you the digital bazaar use case was to get at the terms defined in your context, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to have to specify a vocab for that to work.
That's right.
I think that's correct. So this is what the proposal is going to become. Is there anything else that we decided to change?
Yeah, just I don't know if that's really a change. Just using absolute IRIs in the context.
Okay. So the second proposal.
But could we vote on this first? Because at least I want to use QRIs as values for ID in the context.
Sure. Yeah.
And then the others. The other thing is that if type is ID, then is it not vocabulary relative? Is it only document only?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so if at type vocab is specified, then processing for the value associated with the term returns the result. Okay.
Well, hold on. That you said if the type is ID, then it, I'm trying to figure out what's going to happen when you expand this.
When you expand the current proposal or when you expand
When you expand something that's been compacted using at type at vocab, what does the expanded form look like?
It's at ID, but the value is different.
Okay.
So the expanded form wouldn't change at all, but...
Exactly.
Otherwise, the value of that at ID would be different because the term wouldn't be used.
I'm not following. I'm not following the issue or the solution for it. When you expand, I thought everything just becomes an absolute IRI. Right?
Yeah. So nothing changes in expansion.
Okay.
It should still look like at ID. Greg was making some suggestion about if the type is at ID, then it doesn't use vocab or something, but I wasn't quite following what Greg was saying.
Okay, but that has nothing to do with this proposal. It's something we're discussing next.
Okay.
Right, it's something we're discussing next. It's sort of a corollary, perhaps.
Right. This should mean that we can keep the resolution we had for issue 204.
Yeah, I think that's the point.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have two other things that we need to also cover. Is that right? In these proposals.
Well, hold on a second. does 204 mean you can't use a term? How does this mean you can't use a term?
Well, we already decided that you couldn't use a term as the value for ID, and then we had subsequent problems with that, namely the digital bazaar use case of using terms. And now you can use this type vocab instead to use both terms and resolve against vocab.
What's confusing is that when you're using at type at vocab, it's a pseudo type for an ID. That's what's confusing here, because you say you can't use terms for an ID, but you really can, because you said in the context that the type is a vocab, which is really an ID that resolves against vocab and terms.
Well, saying at type vocab, is not true for, it doesn't apply to at ID. It applies to to
strings.
Foo.
Yeah. Foo colon string. Some string.
So it seems to me if something it can be an ID, it's either explicitly or implicitly type vocab or type ID. If it's type ID, then it follows the normal process of term, query, and relative IRI, or absolute or relative IRI.
No,
so that
not term. That's what the resolution of 204 was removing.
Yeah, but I think that was because of the problem that we just solved by being able to say type vocab, is it not, or...
Oh, you mean the...
Is that still a valid concern?
The explicit value. I see what you mean. The explicit value, if you use foo colon at ID colon something, should that something be possible to be a term? I would prefer not to, but...
No.
Well, I really would prefer not to.
That's the same as with language tagging, and then you use at value, for example, that overrides the term definition. We should do the same for at ID, I think.
All right, so it still makes sense that at ID cannot take a term.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All right.
So the value space of at ID is a compact IRI, an absolute IRI, or a relative IRI.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I think we want support compact RIs in there. Do we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, they're. It's unambiguous.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. We still had two other issues that we wanted to discuss. What did we just discuss the issue that Greg you had?
Well, it's reasonable to do this. If type is ID, then I think it's just like the type vocab, except that it will not use an active at vocab if present.
So Dave Longley's got a couple of questions in the RSC.
Sorry, Greg, I couldn't follow what you were just saying.
So what I was saying is that the difference between type of vocab and type ID is that type ID will not use the active vocabulary for expansion.
And also not terms.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. So like what Marcus said, the value space for ID, well, let's say that type ID is that, the value space for at type vocab is term contact vocab. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so we're clear on that.
Do we need a proposal for that?
Sure, we might as well just be very clear about this.
So my next question following this is when we go to do term selection and we have things that have type vocab, we have one choice that has type vocab and one that has type ID. We need to discuss which choice you're going to make.
That's a very good question.
Hold on. Before we jump to that question, can we get a proposal down for this or... Does the proposal for this result in?
Manu?
Hi, sorry. I had another call. Okay. Resolved. Okay, so that's resolved. Okay.
You didn't vote on that one, Manu.
I'll put myself down as plus one.
Okay.
In the minutes. Dave Longley.
We need to discuss which term you're going to select. If you have two options, one where the type is ID and one where the type is at value, at ID and type at value, Barbellcast, rather. Which one do we choose? It seems like you might want to have a preference for vocab over ID, since it feels like it's a more specific thing.
If the value matches a term, or at vocab.
Right.
Yeah. So the order of selection is if it uses a term, pick that. If it uses at vocab, pick that next, and then finally you use ID.
Well, if it's document relative, pick ID. And then it's ambiguous. It could be either vocab or ID, and I think the preference would be ID.
It seems like you would do two compactions. You would compact the ID first using ID compaction, and if the result is a term, check to see if that can be work with another term. So you would compact the value first.
Yeah, maybe you can work through that this week. We're over our time budget, I'd say, for this call.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry for that, folks. Okay, could we? Sorry, go ahead, Marcus.
Could we just do quick one last proposal, and that's just supporting absolute ROIs in context, so not relative ones.
Yeah. So the proposal is only absolute IRIs
or
in
queries.
IRIs or queries.
Yeah.
And we should be careful with that too, because if you reference remote contexts, do we allow relative IRIs there?
No.
Okay.
We have.
We have in the past.
I think it makes sense to be able to do that.
The link to the remote context, that's what you're saying.
Yes.
I mean, I've had that. If the context is a string,
then we allow it to be a relative IRI. But if it's an object with the definitions, you cannot have any absolute relative IRIs in it.
It would make everything a lot simpler if you wouldn't allow that, I think.
I think it makes sense to allow, when it's a string, that it be a relative IRI.
Yeah,
but within a context, an object context, they are not relative.
Argument is the same there. You could place the context in the same location as your vocabulary. So you could just use relative IRIs there as well. But, yeah.
Maybe we should wait doing this proposal and consider if it's what it simplifies and what it precludes.
We are holding our commercial launch on this last set of features. And staying and waiting another week is we can't keep pushing this off. So we are going to have to make a decision on this and kind of go with it if we keep pushing it off.
But do we need this? I mean, what's the use case for disallowing relative IRIs? I mean, we have a hitherto.
They are not allowed currently. It's just, I think, we don't have any formal proposal for that.
So when processing term definitions in the JSON-LD context, only absolute IRIs and queries are allowed?
Well, or terms.
Or
something
terms.
That resolves to an absolute IRI. That is basically anything that's not a relative document relative IRI.
Yeah.
Okay, so this should be just say document relative IRIs are not supported?
Within an object.
Right.
Right.
Within
Within a term definition in the JSON-LD context, document relative IRIs are not supported.
Yeah.
that is resolved. And we are way over time. Apologies for that, everyone, again. Dave Longley, have we resolved everything that we need to for launch except for the graph name issue?
Yeah, I believe the end result of this is whenever you do compaction, you take absolute IRIs and change them to relative IRIs, and we need to handle the term selection for type at vocab.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's what we've resolved here. Is that correct?
I think so.
Yes.
Okay, and then if we could follow up on the mailing list on how we're going to handle the vnode identifiers as graph names, we'd really appreciate that, because that has a direct impact on normalization and the web payment stuff and all that kind of stuff. We're just waiting for that to be resolved so that we can finalize the software and launch with it. Okay, anything else before we go? All right. Thanks, everyone, for the call, and we'll chat on the mailing list and next week.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.